now approaching. Junction at platform. Passengers, airport, please stay on board. Next stop, road station.
iOS helps you control which apps you share your exact location with. There's more to iPhone.
Rising sea levels, extreme weather patterns, extinctions of species. Our planet needs protecting. I'm Adam Vaughan, the environment editor for The Times, and this is Planet Hope from The Times, in partnership with Rolex and its Perpetual Planet Initiative. In this podcast, we hear from leading experts from around the world who are committed to finding solutions. These explorers, scientists, entrepreneurs, and citizens are committed to a common goal: to protect our home, Earth. Listen now wherever you get your podcasts.
Welcome to The Times. To find out more, head to thetimes.co.uk.
Every goal, every game, everywhere. The Times and the Sunday Times, now with goals.
Hello and welcome to the Game Podcast. And I have very good news for you. I'm back. With me today in the studio is Tony Cascarino and Ben Machel, who, of course, Ben, it's not your first time on this podcast.
No. I'm delighted to be back. Thanks so much for having us.
I know I told this before, but I still think it's a weird and creepy coincidence. With Rory K. Smith away, we've turned to Ben, who is not only the same size and shape as Rory, but also was actually in Rory's class in school up in the posh bit of Yorkshire. Is that right?
It's absolutely correct.
There you go. Fantastic. His accent's a bit different from Rory's, but but still interesting. But far more impressive than Ben and Cass, we have Ollie Kay making his debut this season. Ollie, I love the fact that you waited for Rory not to be here to come on. I'm sure that's not a coincidence, but it's great to have you on board.
Thank you very much, and you are correct in your perception.
Doesn't Ben look like a young Fergal Sharkey?
I'm not familiar with Fergal Sharkey. Who's Fergal Sharkey?
The singer.
The Undertones.
The Undertones, yeah.
No, the answer is no.
I don't like any music with very few exceptions after Jane's Addiction, so bear that in mind. Coming up, we'll be discussing a hectic weekend in the Premier League, the Manchester Derby, the departure of a certain manager. But of course, we're going to start at Old Trafford.
Navas takes the shot. Now, would you believe it? That is the first shot on target in the entire game. Not even they thought it was going to go in.
Ollie, I'm going to start with you, because there was a headline on your piece, and I'm going to repeat this for everybody who doesn't know. We writers do not write headlines. But it was still telling, because it was described as a £600 million match that nobody wanted to win. Was it a case of both teams kind of settling for a draw, or was it fear of losing?
Neither team looked desperate to win. There was never the sense that either of them were really, really going for it. I mean, you very rarely saw the fullbacks going forward on either side. You very rarely saw the two holding midfielders breaking forward. You know, both teams were attacking with four men most of the time, apart from set pieces. So it was a fairly conservative game. Obviously, Silva missing, Aguero missing from the City side, and as Van Gaal pointed out in the interests of equality, he pointed out that United had Luke Shaw and Paddy McNair missing. So it's almost the same thing. But no, I think United were the better team marginally, but neither team did enough to win. Neither team looked like they were disappointed with the draw.
Cass, I saw an interesting stat. It was something like through like 66 minutes. I mean, obviously we saw that United didn't even have a single shot in the first half, but they sort of bossed possession through 66 minutes, which is when Mata went off. Mm. After that, they actually started creating some chances, but their possession statistics went way down. Mm. Is there any sort of broader message there in terms of people who trot out stats such like possession and shots on goal and stuff like that?
Well, if you're prepared to make the killer pass, which is a high risk of losing possession, if you're prepared to get on the ball, Gab, and you're looking to play an eye-of-a-needle pass that's going to set a forward off, there's a high risk of you losing it. But there was very few passes even intended in the first 45 minutes.
But see, here's the beauty to that. Who's the most likely United player to hit the killer pass?
Mata.
Exactly. And he's the guy who came off for midway for Fellaini, who's the guy most likely supposed to head the killer pass. Ben, I looked at this, and I don't really understand Louis van Gaal. It doesn't mean he's wrong, because obviously he's won a few more trophies than I have as a manager, but it just everything just seems so weirdly counterintuitive. Can you make sense of it?
Not really, but I do know exactly what you mean. You sometimes look at team selections and it's never obvious. It's never the simple thing. I mean, I think we talked about this a little bit last season. Sometimes it kind of just, again, it's the sort of daily blind cropping up all over the place and players not necessarily playing the same position two, three times in a row. Yeah, it is hard to work out, but then, as you say, you think, well, you're LVG, so I'm going to give you the benefit of the doubt, but you still need to see it sometimes.
Ollie, so we had Rooney lining up at centre forward, Martial starting out wide. I personally didn't necessarily have a problem with that. The thing that seemed a bit weird for me and is problematic is that when you play Herrera, Mata, Rooney and Martial together, you really only have one guy with legs and or with pace, I should say. Which, if you're going to play possession and you kind of go slow, 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 fast, is a bit of an issue. Why wasn't Depay or Memphis Depay? Why isn't he playing? There's all sorts of rumors surrounding him.
Yeah, I don't know about the rumors. I do know that Depay and Martial, I mean, their signature moves almost are fairly identical, aren't they? It's cutting in from the left hand side onto the right foot on that diagonal run, and I suspect that ultimately it might be hard to play two of them in the same team, or at least to get the most out of two of them in the same team, and unless Martial is to be regarded as an out-and-out centre-forward. Rooney, I mean, obviously there's this huge debate over Rooney at the moment, and Van Gaal got frustrated by the question asked by Mr. Matt Dickinson of this parish, but I mean, every question about Rooney is valid at the moment. It's mm-hmm. Certainly, it's been valid for a long time to ask whether he's past his best. So I think he undoubtedly is past his best, but he's still a good player. It's just that there's United don't seem to be getting the best out of him. He doesn't seem to be getting the best out of United, and it seems to be very difficult to play that centre forward role in this static pedestrian Manchester United team. So maybe if you are going to have one man sort of isolated as a number nine, maybe it has to be the one with pace, which is Martial.
So then where do you put Rooney? Do you put Rooney behind and stick Mata on the wing?
Well, given that he's been playing Mata on the wing anyway, I don't think you lose much by playing Rooney,
so then you've
Rooney
got,
in a deeper role.
But then don't you have two kind of really, really sluggish wingers?
No, Rooney wouldn't be on the wing. Rooney would be in the number 10 role, I would think.
So where does Herrera go?
Well, does Herrera start every week? I mean, does Rooney need to start every week?
That's what I'm getting at.
But it shouldn't be the situation where, you know, Rooney is either disgraceful and dropped, or he's undroppable. It should be a situation where, you know, they're playing two games a week. It doesn't make sense to play Rooney every time. He's clearly feeling the strain physically, apart from anything else. I don't understand why you would play him every week. And Capital One Cup game would seem the ideal time to rest him, but also to look at other options.
Well, other options, Cass. I mean, if there's a Capital One Cup, obviously nobody cares, but I was looking at this, and you mentioned other options, and I wonder if to some degree you aren't also slightly painted in a corner, because obviously Januzaj is gone. When you're talking about people who can play up front, and we're not going to go back to the Fellaini up front freak show. Yeah. And obviously, Memphis up front didn't quite work out. You're still kind of talking about Martial and Rooney and Wilson. And I just look at the options and I see Lingard coming on. I'm wondering, was it so clever to kind of give Januzaj short shrift? Could they have maybe used him as a slight change of pace guy? Because remember, they've also haven't had much in the way of injuries with their attacking players thus far. But no. You would imagine over the course of the season, that'll come as well.
Well, there's been some strange going-ons at United. You think that Januzaj, like Ashley Young, was playing probably the best football he had last season and suddenly has become a literally non-event at United. You know, well, you might look at me like that, Gab, but he played he played a hell of a lot. I mean, I just want to say one thing on Rooney that really puzzled me before the game. I'd sit there and I'm thinking, Vincent Kompany's up against Wayne Rooney. And I'll ask you a question, right? You just say yes or no. Would Wayne Rooney outrun Vincent Kompany?
Over a longer stretch, no.
I'd probably say no, right?
Yeah.
Okay, so we'll go there. Would he out-muscle him physically? No, I don't think so. Would he out-jump him in the air?
Probably not.
No. So all these things, you've got a centre-forward up against someone who really could probably win in most departments against Rooney. And that was, for me, the telling thing that Wayne doesn't do that now. There isn't anything you can go slightly, well, Wayne's going to outrun him. Well, at least you play Martial down the middle. You'd know that Martial could win a foot race over 10, 20 yards against
So you would dump Rooney as well?
Yeah, I think Rooney's planned. If it wasn't for being Wayne Rooney, and he's got lots of, obviously, people... Right. He's achieved a lot in the game to be still in a side because of what he's done over season. But this year, I think there's a load of evidence, Gab, that his form and his performance are well down.
But it's funny because one of the things that everybody has said this weekend is, oh, isn't it a surprise that Wayne Rooney's 30? What a surprise. It's not a surprise that people age. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
What I'm interested to know, you're talking about options. What other options, you know, a year ago, when people know that this is going to happen, that players get older and they're going to have to change the way they play. I'm just trying to think, are there examples that we can point to of really top class players sort of managing their decline, adding stuff to their repertoire? People seem to have been taken aback by suddenly Rooney's not quite as good as what he was in that.
I would totally argue, I mean, that there are really good examples of forwards who reinvented themselves, you know, getting older.
So why is Rooney surprised?
I think there's two things with Rooney, personally. One is that, you know, he just turned 30. He's not necessarily thinking about the reinvention. I remember a quote, which I think maybe he gave to you, Ollie, or you once talked about, or maybe I'm making this up, whereby he talked about how he could move into midfield when his legs go, which seemed like kind of a weird thing to say. But what's interesting with Rooney is that there's a lot of miles on the clock. Somebody tweeted an analogy between Rooney and Shevchenko, and Shevchenko's decline after turn 30, and they pointed out that Rooney's played something like 100 games more than Shevchenko, who also was a young prodigy, already. That's what's curious. What's curious, and maybe here you really see the problem with the instability that they had, the lack of direction going, you know, Moyes, Van Gaal, the managerial turnover, and I think the lack of a director of football stroke football man at the top of the club is you give this guy this enormous contract and you don't necessarily have a plan for how you're going to use him or you're going to manage his reinvention as he gets older. Ollie?
No, I don't think there's been much plan at Manchester United for the past couple of years. The signing of that huge contract, which I think United felt they had no choice in terms of the pressure that they were under at that time, the signing of that huge contract came a few weeks after they signed Juan Mata for however much it was.
32 million,
something like that. It was already hard to work out what United's forward line options were going to be at that time. Then they signed Mata and Rooney. And you think, well, if Rooney's not going to have the strength to be a number nine over the years to come, and if he's going to be playing slightly deeper as a number 10, perhaps that would be the role that would put less pressure on his legs rather than the idea of reinventing himself as a box-to-box midfielder as he gets older, which is, as he said, rather stupid. To do those things at the same time, to sign Mata and re-sign Rooney at the same time at such huge expense, both deals, I thought was very strange. And you've currently got neither of them really playing that number nine role, so that number 10 role. I just think there's no joined up thinking at Manchester United. There hasn't been for a long time, and it's to some extent impressive that results have been as steady and consistent as they have been over the last 12 months, because I don't think performances have been very good at all. I'm not impressed by the direction United are taking, and the sort of decline of Rooney seems to be a symptom of that rather than a cause of that, but the results are still okay, aren't they?
I don't want to be like the guy who keeps blames everything on Ed Woodward, but surely at that time when the Mata and the Rooney deal were made, you had David Moyes 6 months in, but obviously it was his first season. You didn't know how it was going to work out. Is this where maybe the lack of a football guy kind of, or somebody who's ever even managed or bought and sold footballers or whatever, is this where they paid a price for it, Ollie? I mean, is this maybe where Woodward could have picked up the phone? Maybe he did and rung up Sir Alex, who I believe still gets a salary from United, or certainly did at the time, and said, Alec, can you please help me here?
A lot of what Woodward has done and has been praised for has been sort of headline-grabbing deals of one type or the other, whether it's the Rooney contract or whether it's the Mata deal or the Di Maria or Di Maria deal and or the Falcao deal. I mean, I look at those deals, the four of them, you know, next to each other, and think, well, what is the plan there? I mean, an awful lot of what Ed Woodward seems to have been keen to do is about making statements on behalf of Manchester United and himself, rather than doing anything particularly wonderfully clever and strategic that's going to help Manchester United on the pitch. And I would have thought that a manager such as Van Gaal would be exasperated by now by the sort of lack of direction over three transfer windows. But for some reason, he doesn't seem to be, because he seems to be relatively content at the moment.
In Woodward's defence, you could also point out it's always kind of hard to do something strategic and long-term planning when you've got a manager who's older already and who says, like, well, I think after next season, you know, I'll want to go, and this will, you know, this will be my last job or whatever, my wife, blah, 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 which, you know, you can understand from Van Gaal's point of view, but to me, that makes it all the more serious.
Yeah.
You should have a director of football, somebody who can guide you medium-term forward. You know, because your next manager might be nothing like Louis van Gaal.
United's style doesn't help Rooney as well, which is part of the problem. But if you look at, say, 30 and the age, well, I think he signed, I'm pretty sure Sir Alex signed Van Persie at 29, he signed Berbatov at 29, signed Sheringham at 31, taking him to Old Trafford. But they had a style and a group within that that would complement them. And I don't think that's the case today. I think it's slightly different. Rooney's playing in a team that is nowhere near as adventurous.
I want a word on City. I got the impression that, you know, while we love Manuel Pellegrini when he was all attacking, I think they kind of sniffed out early on, said, all right, look, there's no Aguero, there's no David Silva. You could tell in the first few minutes that Kevin De Bruyne was having a bad day. Yaya Toure had Schneiderlin in his pants and couldn't go anywhere. That's a euphemism, by the way. It's not literal. And he said, you know what? Hey, if they want to keep passing the ball sideways and engage in all this aimless possession, that's fine. We'll take a draw. We'll still be joint top with Arsenal. And then we'll just whoop Arsenal and win our title later. Is that pretty much the right thing?
I think that's exactly the right thing. What you were saying before, and I was going to ask it, is this Jones and Smalling thing, because we've been talking so much about Man U up front. I'm trying to work out for myself how good they've become, because for a long time I would look at those two at the back and think, part of me would just be like, oh, it's a little bit of a kind of a little bit of an own brand sort of Vidic and Ferdinand sort of thing going on. But they seem to, from what I've seen, and it probably helps that they've got Schneidlin and Schweinsteiger in front of them and everything, but they seem to be doing all right. Yeah. I don't know if anyone else agrees with that, or if we've got a sense of where they're going to go.
Ollie?
Totally agree. I think Smalling has really matured over the last, I mean, people say this season. I had the feeling the penny was dropping with him about halfway through last season, and I don't think you would look at many players at Manchester United over the past 2 years post-Ferguson, or even the past 12 months under Van Gaal, who have really improved. But Smalling is certainly one of them, and he does look now like a really good aggressive defender, whereas previously, look, you know, he just seemed to be ambling, and it's like something has changed in his mind, his mindset, and that's impressive. I think Jones had one of his better games yesterday. I mean, he looked solid and dependable. Sometimes his distribution wasn't great, but it's still one of the weaknesses in their squad that they don't have that outstanding central defender. They certainly don't have an established central defensive partnership. But then you look at Smalling and Jones and think, well, if they are going to play every week, maybe they can build that understanding, and maybe they can help each other.
Terry's clearance is up rather than away. Noble. Now Creswell. And there's Carroll! What a story! Andy Carroll's first goal since long-term injury. Maybe enough to beat the champions.
So Chelsea lose again. Mourinho gets very angry. West Ham are third in the table. I know y'all gave him a lot of love last week in my absence. Ollie, I look at this, and if you break down the incidents, did Chelsea play that badly, given that, all right, let's face it, the disallowed goal line technology, I'm going to say this, there's some voodoo stuff going on there. It's almost like, ooh, we have so much faith in the machines because the camera says so and the little diagram comes up. But if I'm Mourinho, I kind of say, you know what? Yeah, I think the ball was in. And I don't think he's crazy for saying that. You know, the cameras have a margin of error as well. When I saw that little, like, diagram, for a guy like Mourinho who's already kind of prone to conspiracies, you know, I could see how he'd be annoyed. Then you have the Cesc call, which this disallowed goal, which could have gone either way. And then you have poor Matic getting sent off. Chelsea deserved something from the game, did they?
I thought it was one of their better performances this season. I mean, you look at some of the few games they've won, and they've not necessarily played as well as they did on Saturday. It wasn't a bad performance. They happened to be playing against a good team, playing well, fired up and so on, and organised. And as you say, they didn't get the rubber of the green over some of those incidents. I don't think we could put Bruno Matic one into that category. I mean, the Matic sending off was too clear bookable offences. I thought that the Fabregas, you know, it's toss of a coin, and you would, you know, there is still this sort of unwritten understanding that the benefit of the doubt in those situations should go with the attacking team. The goal line technology one, well, it did look correct. I mean, it's infuriating when it's that close, but it did look correct. I can understand Mourinho thinking that the world's against him, but when it's a guy who thinks the world is against him anyway, even when his players are getting away with stamps rather than being punished with stamps, or when they're getting decisions in their favour rather than decisions against them. And I've limited time for Mourinho's, well, no time for Mourinho's conspiracy theories and so on, because, you know, I mean, he's the boy who cried wolf, isn't he? I mean,
well, it's not a conspiracy, it's a campaign, remember?
They were unlucky on Saturday. That's not to say West Ham were lucky to win, it's just to say that Chelsea were unlucky. Teams who are doing everything right tend to be luckier, don't they?
One thing that was just funny, just reading a lot of the match reports from that game, they all, or many of them, opened with the observation that, you know, Mourinho was facing renewed sanctions, which is like something you read about Assad, do you know what I mean? It's just even the language.
North Korea.
Yeah, exactly. Even the language, you know, he'll read that and think, you know, sanctions. And it just plays to this whole narrative of, as you say, there's a campaign against it.
For me, I thought what he said after the Southampton game was really serious, and I think he should have gotten a ban. Instead, he gets a suspended ban, right? It seems to me like he kind of said like a softly one. And then he came out with this whole thing about, no, but, you know, they did with the appeal. And, you know, I even read somewhere that the guy pointed out that English is his third language. Okay, guys, take it from somebody who speaks more than one language. Nobody has a third language. You have your first language, and then everything else is a second language, right? Leaving aside the fact that, you know, Mourinho was an English translator for Bobby Robson 17 years ago, or even more than that. Like, you're really going to come out and say, well, but he didn't know what he was saying. Come on now. I mean, you feel for him. I agree. I thought they did play a better game, but we've got to stay on Mourinho just for a minute, because so many papers are coming out and saying that he has basically 1 week to save his job, and if they lose against Liverpool, he's out. Now, my understanding, and I could be talking to the wrong people who like to lie to me, say that that's not the case, that they're going to make a decision based on performances and blah, blah, blah. And they're not going to be, you know, if they play brilliantly against Liverpool, but then, you know, lose because the ball bounces off Klopp's backside into the back of the net, then it's not like they're going to sack him. But, Cass, should they really be thinking in terms of sacking him now? Shouldn't they at least just wait to... I mean, how much worse can the situation possibly get? It's not like they're going to go into the relegation zone, right?
Well, there has to be huge concerns, because there's been too many incidents this year, and it's become all about Mourinho this season.
When they win, it's usually about Mourinho. Yeah, when they lose, well, it's about Mourinho. It is. When is it not about Mourinho?
Well, it's becoming an issue where... I've always been a fantastic admirer of him. I've loved what his teams have done and the way he's played at times. I just think that he is a very... I think there's a lot of managers that clone themselves on the way Mourinho approached the game in the modern era. And I think he's the one responsible for it. But there's a time now where it feels like we're embarrassed for Mourinho. I feel embarrassed for some of the stuff that he's coming out with and the way his team... And I'm expecting answers from a guy that... has changed football. He did. He said, in my opinion, and I don't know, I'm just confused by him. Now, I looked at Saturday, and you're right, all what you said, they played okay, they could have won that game, they're fine decisions. Zouma ain't a right back. There's no way that Zouma is a right back.
As you're listening to me, Daisy, Apple's iPhone disassembly robot, is dismantling an iPhone into lots of recyclable parts. That's how Apple recovers more materials than conventional recycling methods. Thanks, Daisy. There's more to iPhone.
A lot can happen in the next 3 years. Like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans are available for these changing times. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer budget-friendly, flexible coverage for people who are in between jobs or missed open enrollment. The plans last nearly 3 years in some states, with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. So for whatever tomorrow brings, UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans may be for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-. So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
And I don't see how Mourinho can see that. That he thinks that he can do a reasonable job. He's changed his back four on so many occasions. And obviously leaving people out. Having changed, then buys a £20 million fullback and said he's not ready, you know, in Ram.
Yeah, okay. We got to be fair. We got to be fair on this, Baba Rahman. I mean, we can't go and to what degree it was Mourinho who said, "Ooh, I really want Baba Rahman because he's gonna guy I'm gonna build my team around." And to what degree the club said we think he's the right signing. You know, we got to be fair on this. I'll give you a better example if you like. There's a guy who started at left back who's a homegrown Chelsea product for Watford and who did very well and who's done very well every time, the few times he's played for Chelsea. That's Nathan Ake.
Yeah.
He's been with Mourinho for 2 years and the guy goes on loan to Watford and kind of immediately establishes himself. Mm. I don't understand why you need to do that. Correct me if I'm wrong. Has Bertrand actually played for? He's played for England. He's been capped, hasn't he?
Yeah, he's been capped and he's been injured for some.
And who started a Champions League final as well and who's also a former Chelsea guy. I don't quite get this, why this constant need to move and do business and stuff when you do have other options. Mm. And then you wouldn't have to play Zuma right back.
No. Yeah, I agree with you there. And that goes, you know, like Rafa was accused of not playing John Terry and he was ridiculed that was something that's haunted him as his judgment as a manager. Now, Mourinho's had a few, like you've just mentioned, and you can add others into that where De Bruyne has gone off to Wolfsburg and been sold for 50 million coming back. You know, there are players out there now that people are going, really? Jose had him and he didn't use him.
But I think, that's totally true, and every manager, you know, successful ones, there'll be examples you can point to where you thought, oh, you know.
Well, the keeper, Ben, is now looking to be, it's coming, it feels like it's haunting him, isn't it, Cech? You know, where Cech is doing so well, he is Gab. You're looking at that. He has.
Yeah, I know, but they sent Cech away because they have Courtois, and then Courtois gets hurt. Yeah. You can't blame everything on Mourinho. It's not like Mourinho injured Courtois.
But as much as you can give credit for him for so many good decisions, when things are going the other way.
Mourinho, I'm sure, wanted to keep Cech. It's not like Mourinho said, I don't want Cech as my backup keeper. I mean, it was a club decision. You can't blame everything on him, you know.
Isn't part of the problem just that when you go to such lengths to create a cult of personality like Mourinho has done, that's fine. But then if the players start to not like that personality, then you can, you know, transfer dealings are almost sort of secondary to that. If people start to not like what you're selling, then what can you do?
I think you nailed it. And I think also the fact that he doesn't come out and speak to the media afterwards. I don't want to give West Ham short shrift. I know y'all talked him to death last week, but they're third in the table. Ollie, can you tell me what specifically Bilic has done?
It's hard, isn't it? I mean, they've bought well over the summer, Lanzini and Payet and so on. I mean, but I would say that he was building on good foundations left by Allardyce, and he's built on it well and creatively. And if you look at the games they've lost, I mean, it's been Bournemouth at home, and I think they drew or lost to Norwich at home. I mean, those are silly points that they've dropped, and they've picked up so many impressive wins, not just against the big teams, but obviously they're the ones that they've got most praise and credit for. And they just look like a really decent team. And to be honest, they looked like a really decent team this time last year, but they look like a better team now because they've bought well again. They're playing nice football, clever football, and they seem to be working out ways to win matches, you know, different kinds of matches. It's not really been the West Ham way, and it was said under Allardyce as well, it's not really been the West Ham way to win games of that nature when the big boys comes down, or particularly going away to the big boys. So something mentally has changed with them.
I'll tell you what, it's interesting, Ollie, that if you take the last week they've played well. They played well on Saturdays again, with the fact that he was even prepared to get Andy Carroll off the bench, create the winner for Palace away, then gets the winner against Chelsea. 5 points in a week from a guy that he knows he can use as a weapon in Andy Carroll. Mm. He's clever enough to go, do you know what? If we're getting outplayed slightly or this isn't quite working, we can just go and get someone on who might scare the life out of the back four. And they did. And I think that's what I've liked about Bilic.
What's impressed me is, Ben, is that you look at this, there's a number of guys in the team are thinking of Zarate, who I thought played very well. Mm. Payet, perfect example. Carroll, to some degree. Guys who are very talented, but maybe even in his own way, Tompkins at the back was a guy I kind of have a weak spot for, but who are good players, but who've had issues and have come with some level of baggage. And so far, he's managed to keep a lid on it, and he's kept everybody going in the same direction. And I wonder if maybe there isn't a big sort of man management element to Bilic thus far.
Absolutely. I mean, again, having not met the man, but certainly seen him, he's likeable. How can you not? I mean, perhaps, you know, perhaps some people have reasons, but you know, there's an enthusiasm for football, and it's one of these things, Cass, you probably know better than me, but if there's someone who gives this impression of enjoying being there and enjoying football, then that's going to, you know, boost you 10-15%, isn't it?
All right, final question. I'm going to throw this all out to you, since you guys are all much more into music than I am. Jurgen Klopp says he's heavy metal. Slaven Bilic, we know, is, if not heavy metal, at least hard rock, because he's actually played in a legit band and stuff like that, unlike Klopp. Who's more rock and roll, Klopp or Bilic? Cass?
Klopp.
Ollie?
Bilic is more rock and roll.
Bilic.
Bilic. Easily Bilic. Come on,
he's
man.
He's got the earrings and the fag. Yeah, he's
come on, man. Like, seriously. Come on. Germany's contribution, other than Rammstein, obviously.
Scorpions.
That's what I mean. There's kind of like a toolish effect there, yet doesn't apply to hardcore Croatian rock. Right, moving on to our debate this week. Our friend Tim Sherwood has been relieved of duty at Aston Villa. Maybe just a coincidence, but if you notice that I'm going to throw this out there, sit to Ben, see how sharp he is, because Rory would get this. Three clubs have changed their manager this season. What do they all have in common? All right, he's not good. Okay. Cass?
Directors of football or something?
No. Ollie, you know this. You went to a fancy university in these two.
All British managers.
Yes, and they're all owned by
Americans.
By Americans, that's right. And in fact, to further muddy the waters, in the case of Villa, you know, Remy Gard is being linked to the job, ex-Arsenal. Tom Fox runs the club, ex-Arsenal. This Hendrik Almstadt guy, ex-Arsenal. Now, you have links to Aston Villa, Cass. Is this a plan by Kroenke to go and destroy Villa by sending his little interlopers in there to destroy the club once and for all?
God, that is a conspiracy.
Well, think about it. Would you want all these, you know, people complained about the Cockney Mafia at Newcastle, but here it just seems to be former gooners.
There's something very...
Gilles Grimandi on his way as well?
Ian
Wright was in here a few minutes ago. Maybe he's...
There's something very strange going on at Villa from the very top, that's for sure.
What's strange? Is there a club dysfunction, or is it a case that Sherwood couldn't get things to work out?
Well, it hasn't worked out, but I do think the club's in a dysfunctional way, whereas the owner of the football club has very little interest, doesn't even have any much dialogue with his manager, which Tim Sherwood alluded to last week. Where
how much dialogue does Kroenke have with Wenger, Glazer have with Van Gaal?
Gab, if you love something a lot and you want to put a lot into it, you have dialogue. If your football club is not working right, and that Villa is not, you make sure you're in contact.
He hired Tom Fox.
You can't go that. Will you tell me that Roman doesn't have much to do with Chelsea?
No, I'm just, some
Come
people.
On.
No, of course, but there are.
He'd be really hands-on.
Okay, but there's also some owners who are basically. I mean,
yeah, in other countries, but they still.
How much dialogue does Katarina Liebherr have with Ronald Koeman? You think they Skype each other late at night?
No, but I think...
Come on.
But the club's going well. It doesn't feel like... If things are going wrong, you, as an owner, you'd want to be knowing exactly what problems that could be solved about moving the club forward and getting the type of results.
But he addressed it. But he brought in Tom Fox, and they went to this model with Hendrik Almstadt. I mean, and this is one of the issues, isn't it, Ben, that... part of the narrative, as outlined by a bunch of former pros over the weekend that I saw on television, was poor Tim Sherwood. He had the evil director of football there, this Henrik Almstad, who sounds doubly foreign. And he went and he bought a lot of guys that Tim didn't want. And Tim wanted to go and sign Adebayor and Aaron Lennon and Andros Townsend and guys like that. Maybe Nabil Bentaleb as well. But instead, they got stuck with all these French no-names.
Yeah, no, I sympathise with that. But
plus Micah Richards and Julian Lescott, but hey, that's fine, that's by the by.
Yeah, and it was...
Is that the narrative? Is that the problem?
No, the problem's much bigger than that, and speaking the opposite of Castles, and total neutral, who doesn't really care about Aston Villa one way or another, you look at it and at first you're bored, and then after a while you stop being bored and you start to get angry because over the past however many seasons, seven seasons, you just think, what are Aston Villa about? Like, if... I probably wouldn't notice if they were not in the Premier League for the past few seasons, because they just don't... I mean, obviously there's FA Cup final last season, whatever. But you just think, where are they going? What's the big idea? Like what... You look at Aston Villa team sheet and you think, okay, yes, it, no, then...
It's funny, because I'm thinking of Radiohead and that song, Creep. You know, I want you to notice when I'm not around. Yeah. You wouldn't notice, right?
No.
You didn't like music.
Radiohead's not really music, though, is it?
What is it?
It's kind of
not
like,
football.
No, it's not football. But I mean, there are certain basic. I don't live in a shoebox. There are certain artists in the last 25 years that I'm familiar with. Radiohead is one of them.
But you saw, I think it was in the paper this morning, yesterday, and they were talking about the replacements for Sherwood, and the owner said, you know, we just want to stress, no plans have been made. And you saw, I think, duh. Like, do you know what I mean? Like, no plans have been made. That kind of, you think if there's a manager who's lost,
but that's blatantly not true, Ben. That they are, well, they have got replacement, and it will happen quite quickly.
And it's going to be Remy Gard?
So we're led to believe, but right. I believe that it will be very quick.
Ollie, I want to get your take on this, because I didn't know when Henrik Almstad looked over. So, but according to Villa's press release, he took over, I think, on July 15th. Presuming that they did some transfer business before he arrived, you can't blame everything on this and the transfers. I mean, I look at this... And it does seem to be this very simple narrative, right? So they have those evil analytics nerds. They have the evil director of football type. They have an American chief executive who used to run NBA Asia. And they go for a manager who, I think, or they keep a manager in the summer who is actually, I think is a really bright guy, but is also slightly more traditional type who prefers doing things a different way. Is this the basis of the dysfunction here?
I would say the problem is staleness, that they've been stale for such a long time. I don't have a great problem I don't have any problem at all with the director of football model when it's done well, and when there's joined up thinking and when the manager is on board with the players that are being brought in. And it just seemed that, you know, that over the space of a fortnight, they seem to buy a lot of players from France. You know, Gay, MRV, IU, Vertu. You know, I don't think anybody would deny that there is better value in terms of transfer fees, better value in terms of wages, buying from France than buying from England. You would look at Villa and you would say that is a team that lacks proven Premier League quality, experience. But obviously, they bought Lescott, they bought Richards. I can understand Sherwood looking at it and thinking, well, an Aaron Lennon would be a good idea, you know, whether it was on loan or permanent or whatever. I can even understand him thinking Adebayor would be a good idea. Instead, he's got, you know, Gestede and all these players who are finding their feet in England, young players who are finding their feet.
Hasn't Gestede been in England for several years now?
Mm. Yeah, but he's not been in the Premier League, has he?
Yeah, but it's not like they play a different sport in the Championship. Watford get promoted. They don't have any... I mean, they don't have that many guys with Premier League experience. I think Cathcart is one of the few, and I think he might have played twice for United, right? They're doing fine.
He was the one out of those sort of late summer signings that had played in England. Lescott came later as well.
And Richards too.
But Richards was early. Richards predated the football. So I think anybody would look at Villa's team sheet and think, what are they trying to do? It's fine to buy foreign. It's clever to buy foreign as long as you're buying a certain quality of player. And the sad thing from Villa's point of view is that clubs like Swansea, clubs like Southampton are buying a better quality of player. They're spending more on players at times. And it's not to say all of Villa's players are bad. I quite like the look of Amavi, the left-back, who Sherwood evidently doesn't fancy at all. But this summer's intake at Villa just doesn't look good enough. And it has to, you know, it had to be really good after these years of complete underinvestment. With the TV money coming, they had an opportunity and a necessity to spend big and spend cleverly. And I don't feel like they've done that, really.
Right, how about some quick hits? Steve McLaren is extremely angry. Penalty denied at one end. Catamol and Wijnaldum, penalty and red card. Colaccini on Fletcher at the other. Cass, is he right? Did those decisions cost them the game?
Well, Gab, I mean, the game was so comfortable for Newcastle. Yes, it was 0-0, but they looked like the only team looked like scoring. The penalty happens. Colaccini's decision, I just thought, was crazy. Taking a player out, and yeah, the referee might have said, no, it's a shoulder barge, but it's ended up costing Newcastle losing the game 3-0 penalty and sending off. And from that moment, they didn't have a chance.
So McLaren's right, this defeat doesn't really count. Big Sam has made it six in a row for Sunderland managers in the Tyne-Wear Derby. It didn't really help the guys before him, Di Canio, Poyet and Advocat, keep their jobs. But all of that is just coincidence and happenstance. Right, Ollie?
I would say that with Allardyce, they got a guy who is not only going to do what Poyet and Di Canio particularly did in terms of energising a fairly disillusioned team, or deeply disillusioned team, a deeply disillusioned club, but also a manager who's going to stabilise things and build in the medium term. And I think that is a difference. He's come in early. He's got that important early result that's going to give them a bit of breathing space and give them a bit of momentum. And I would expect them to. I would think they have a considerably better chance of survival than they did a week ago, or 2 weeks ago.
Well, I'm sure he'll be hoping he won't be building in the Championship. Harry Kane runs roughshod over Bournemouth, scoring a hat-trick for Spurs in their 5-1 away win. Pochettino says it's the best moment of his career, and here he goes all philosophical, because young Harry Kane has experienced both the good and the bad. Ben, what does he mean?
I think it means that he's relieved for himself as a manager, because Harry Kane's scored some goals, and it's probably important to point out that Harry Kane didn't score a hat-trick because he was Harry Kane. He scored a hat-trick because he was playing up front against Bournemouth, which on that day, I'm not saying it was easy to score a hat-trick, but it wasn't particularly difficult either. I think he's hoping that it kickstarts a virtuous cycle, not just for Kane, but for the players behind him as well.
Christian Benteke comes off the bench and gives Jurgen Klopp the illusion of his first Liverpool win, only for Southampton to equalise late. Cass, you know a thing or two about being a big striker known for his aerial prowess. How good a header was it? Can you break it down technically and explain what he did?
Well, obviously, the delivery of the ball is the most important thing.
Okay, but that wasn't Benteke. That was whoever delivered it.
Yeah.
So, well, we want to praise Benteke here. We want to give some love to the big target man striker, not the little the little wuss who delivers the ball.
Well, the art of heading is attacking a ball from the direction it's coming from and being able to guide it to where you want it to go with power, which he did. And I think that, you know, it gives the keeper no chance, because he's just literally got a great leap, he's watched the ball, he's timed it, he's met it perfectly, and as you saw, it can end up in the back of the net. I just thought it's so rare that we see these goals, these type of goals in football, because very few managers want to do what Andy Carroll can do, what Benteke can do at the end of games and win your football matches.
We saw two in one weekend, and in fact, at some point, we're going to discuss those quotes that Arsene Wenger gave in the summer when he said, there's no strikers like that anymore, because, and he
there
sort
are.
Of blames, I know, but the yeah, I disagree with Wenger as well, but it is an interesting theory, as it often is when he talks about football. Jamie Vardy does it again as Leicester win and find themselves just 1 point out of fourth place. Ollie, this one is really easy for you. Who's finishing higher this season, Leicester City or West Ham? And percentage chance for either to finish in the top four?
I'll say West Ham, more likely. And in terms of percentages, I hate these questions because you really have to think about them. But if I have to look at the bookies odds, the bookies still have Leicester 40-1. Well, some bookies have Leicester 40-1 to finish in top four. West Ham 16-1. Chelsea evens. People are convinced that, or the bookies are convinced that, you know, Leicester and West Ham will run out of steam very quickly, and that Chelsea will recover. And I'm not sure I would be rushing to put any money on Leicester to finish in the top four, but to have them at 40-1 and West Ham at 16-1 seems very generous.
Crazy Claudio's only just getting warmed up. Arsenal's 2-1 win over Everton makes it 4 in a row in the Premier League, and they join City at the top of the table. Ben, it's all coming together for Wenger, isn't it? This is the year that they finally do it, right?
Could well be, but a lot of Arsenal fans I know are saying exactly the same thing. But I think underneath the excitement, there's an anxiety, because I know that this season is kind of, it's the season they have to do it if they are going to do it, because Chelsea aren't going to be this bad next season. Man United and Man City are only going to spend more money. I think that however kind of pleased they are at how things are panning out now, I think deep down they know, and as the season progresses, it's going to become more and more and more apparent that if they're going to do anything in terms of winning the Premier League, it's going to have to be this season, and I think that may work against them in the long run.
If I were cynical, I might come out and say, well, gee, if they don't do it, then actually nothing happens. They still have another summer where they go and spend or not spend money, and Wenger's still there a year from now, and Kroenke's still not talking, and the cash reserves keep rising.
Sorry, Gab, this is one for you. I do shudder to ask, but Sheikh Salaman, Ramon Vega, Tokyo Sexwell, David Nakid, Prince Ali, Jerome Champagne, and if his suspension gets lifted, Michel Platini, nominations for the FIFA presidency have closed. But will it really be one of these guys to lead football as of next February 26th?
Yeah, see, I'm not sure about this, because you can poke huge holes in many of these guys. And no, they're not all crooks. Some of them are good people. Others, there are serious, serious questions about. Sheikh Salman in particular, it's kind of curious that he's coming under a lot of pressure because of Bahrain's human rights record. But if I had to pick out of these, if the suspension gets lifted, I still think it's going to be Michel Platini. If the suspension is not lifted out of this bunch, I kind of think Tokyo Sesuale is in a really, really good position.
Sorry,
it's not Sex Whale.
I'll
no.
call him a Sex Whale.
No. Okay, Sex Whale's a lot cooler.
Yeah.
And he's a black belt in karate, by the way, and he's also a millionaire. And he's also a major human rights leader.
He's got my vote, definitely.
He's a very, very impressive character. Right, that's all we've got time for right now. Many, many thanks to my guest today, Ollie Kay from his... you're in Rippendon, yes?
Yes, it's been so long you've forgotten where I live.
But are you in your conservatory, or are you in the house?
I'm in the dining room today.
You're in the dining room. Have you ever been to Rippendon?
No, but I've heard it's very nice.
It's lovely. I believe Ben, our former colleague,
you've
Ben Smith...
You've only been for me.
Sorry?
You've heard that from me.
I believe our former colleague Ben Smith lives there too, and sometimes he tweets pictures of the lovely bucolic countryside.
Where is it?
Where is Rippendon?
Yeah.
It's near Halifax, isn't it? It's near Yorkshire, isn't it?
That's very precise. It's Manchester and Leeds.
Between Manchester. What kind of Yorkshireman are you that you don't know where Rippendon is? It's in between Manchester and Leeds.
Someone who doesn't go to Manchester.
We were joined by Ben Machell, and it was an absolute treat. And no, we don't just invite him on because he's the cheaper, low-rent, off-brand version of Rory K. Smith. In fact, he's more enjoyable than Rory, isn't he?
He does look like Fergal Sharkey.
But we like Rory more.
He's more likely to pronounce Sesuale as Sex Whale, and I think Ben gets points for that.
This is true, but then Rory loses points because despite being a fluent Spanish speaker, he still calls the Everton manager occasionally Roberto Martinez. And, of course, we have Tony Cascarino gave us a little mini-clinic on heading the ball. Please press that subscribe button. We're going to be back next week. And remember, you can get exclusive football, rugby, and cricket highlights free as part of your subscription. It's just £12 for a 12-week trial. Just search The Times online. Till next time, bye-bye.
Your subscription to The Times and The Sunday Times now comes with access to every Barclays Premier League goal. Refresh your app, choose your team, accept notification, and you're away.
VoiceOver describes what's happening on your iPhone screen.
VoiceOver on, settings.
So you can navigate it just by listening.
Books, contacts, calendar, double tap to open. Breakfast with Anna from 10 to 11.
And get on with your day. Accessibility. There's more to iPhone.
Off Air, the podcast. with Jane Garvey and Fee Glover.
I go to the sink and I have some cheese.
Keep your cheese in the sink.
Doesn't everybody?
Every Monday to Thursday, Jane and Fee keep the microphones on after their Times radio show.
I think if we were to do a Mr. and Mrs.
Oh, no.
How would that go in the booth?
Badly. It would go very badly.
Unencumbered and off air.
Two tiny women with gobs.
Off air, the podcast. Now available on the Times radio app.